the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler. You know, one of the main sources of almost everyone's retirement income is Social Security. And since it is that, it's important to understand the rules of Social Security and how they work. Because the decisions you make as you come up upon taking your Social Security benefits oftentimes will be permanent, and those decisions could be detrimental or helpful, of course, which all impacts the soundness of your retirement. So what we're going to do today on the program is review the basics and background information about Social Security that can help you make better informed decisions. So, Jim, where do we start with this?
Well, let's start with some of the basics. Number one, when you start Social Security, the benefits are guaranteed for your life, for that of yourself and also a loved one like a surviving spouse. The other thing is Social Security does have spousal benefits. Even though your wife might have never worked, she is still entitled to half your benefits. And half those benefits may be greater than her own benefits. The other thing about Social Security, it's indexed against inflation. Now, some years, like for example, in 2016, we did not get any increase in Social Security benefits because the inflation rate during 2015 was so low, there was no increase in benefits. The other thing is Social Security has preferential tax treatment. It could have zero tax. It could be taxed up to 50% or taxed up to 85%.
Yeah, but there are certain requirements to qualify for Social Security, am I right?
Yeah, you have to have what is called 40 credits. You get a credit for every quarter that you work. So basically, you have 40 credits would equal 10 years that you would pay into the system. Now, obviously, the longer that you paid into the system, the greater your benefits are more likely to be. And also, in addition, the amount of salary that you paid into the system. For example, if you were always paying in, let's say the maximum amount of Social Security based on the Social Security cap, you're probably more likely to get the maximum benefit, which is a little over $2,600 a year. Now, let's talk about some very important ages for Social Security. And that is the age 66 and 67. If you were born between 1943 in 1954, you get full Social Security benefits at age 66. If you're born after 1960 and later, you will have to wait to age 67 to get full Social Security benefits. Now, in between those dates, between 1954 and 1960, they begin to scale in those benefits by months over the age of 66. So, I guess the real question is, when you're looking at Social Security, you can get it as soon as age 62, and you can delay it to age 70. And we're going to talk about the advantages of doing that, because this plays a very important role when you're trying to plan for your retirement benefits, and you're looking for something that's going to be fairly predictable.
One of the areas that people tend to get messed up on is the age rules when it comes to Social Security. That, of course, includes the benefits. This could possibly be one of the more confusing areas because a lot of people take Social Security benefits at age 62, which is the earliest you can do it, but it may not be the optimum based on the rules.
Well, I mean, the soonest that you can get Social Security benefits, now this is a little bit different for a surviving spouse, which is age 60 is the soonest for a surviving spouse. But for generally most working individuals, the soonest that you can get your benefits is age 62. And believe it or not, John, the vast majority of Americans take their benefits at age 62. There's only one problem. At age 62, you are only going to get 75% of your entitled benefits. So, for example, if your benefit at age 66 is $1,000, if you took that benefit at age 62, you would only get $750. Now, at age 63, it goes up to 80% of your full benefit. At age 64, it goes up to 86%. And at age 65, it goes up to 93%. And then at 66, it's 100%. Now, that's assuming you were born between, let's say, the ages 1943 to 1954. If you were born after 1954, let's say you were born in the year 1955, it's 66 and 2 months. And they add a number of months that you can get your benefits. Now, here's the big difference that is very, very important. And that is, if you delay getting your benefits, your Social Security benefit will go up 8% a year, guaranteed. So, for example, if you waited, let's say you are 66 right now, instead of taking your benefit this year, you wait to age 67, next year your benefit will be 108% of your regular benefit. It'll be 116% of your benefit at age 68, 124% of your benefit at age 69, and 132% of your benefit at age 70. Going back to my example of $1,000 at age 66, you would get $1,320 by delaying your benefit to age 70. Now, we're going to talk later on for surviving spouses and a case study that we're going to talk about today, why you may want to do that.
Now, there are people, Jim, though, who take, say, retirement at age 62. They discover they can't just live on that or whatever other income they have, so they go back to work part-time. But it seems that there are penalties if you do.
Well, there is. Under age 66, for every $2 that you earn over $16,920, you lose a dollar of your Social Security benefits. So if you find yourself that you start at age 62, you start working, and then you say, gosh, I really can't make it on this money. I really need to go to work. And you're going to be making more than, let's say, $17,000. You really want to stop your Social Security payments. And you may even want to pay back some of the benefits that you got. And for full retirement age, let's say the year that you turn 66, you take your benefits, but you take your benefits early, it's $41,880. You lose a dollar. That's the threshold that they start subtracting benefits. Now, the great thing is, once you reach full retirement age, whether that's going to be 66 for you, depending on your birthday, or 67, you can work unlimited. And this was something that came into effect in 2000. There were a number of benefits, John, that came in the year 2000 that allowed full working, because it used to be you would have to work to age 70 before you would not get penalized for doing any work. There was also something that they put in to equalize or help women, which was file and suspend. And unfortunately, we'll get into this in just a moment. In the year 2015, Congress took away that benefit, which greatly harms women in Social Security. We talked about it at the time, but 85% of the beneficiaries, surviving beneficiaries of Social Security, are women. And Congress and President Obama took this benefit away, and it really does a lot of harm for women. It was going a long way to equalize, because a lot of times women aren't in the workforce as long as men, number one. Number two, they take time off to have kids. The average woman, according to Social Security, has 13 out of the 35 years they use to average your Social Security earnings off. So obviously, a woman may make less in benefits. One of the ways they used to equalize that was something called file and suspend. I'm not really going to cover it here because it's no longer available. Why spend time talking about something that isn't there? The other thing is, Social Security is indexed for inflation. Now, in the year 2016, you got zero increases in your Social Security benefits. You know, you take 2017, it increased a little, but not much, because the inflation index went up 0.3%. So there are cost of living increases. Obviously, if the inflation rate is low, you're not going to get much. If the inflation rate ticks up, as it did in the last decade, where the inflation rate got up to 5% in 2007, the benefits are obviously higher. And that also helps when it comes to Medicare.
Let us look at the issue of surviving spouses and divorced spouses. How do they factor in here?
Well, the good news is if you have been married to an individual 9 months, you can get surviving benefits. In other words, let's say you got married. You were married for, let's just say, a year. Your husband passes away. You could get his benefits. And also, you can start getting those benefits as early as age 60 if you are a widow. You don't have to wait to age 62, although those benefits are reduced. The other thing is, if you are divorced and were married for at least 10 years and you've been divorced 2 years, you're entitled to Social Security benefits of your former spouse. Even though, let's say, your former husband got remarried, you would still be entitled to 50% of his Social Security benefits. So there are a couple things here that are very important for surviving spouses and divorced spouses. But the general rules for a divorced woman, she would have to been married 10 years, divorced for 2 years. And if you are a surviving spouse, you must have been married at least 9 months, and you have to be at least age 60 to start getting benefits.
So if we're looking at age factors, we've covered two here, how soon you can take it, and then what happens if you delay it. There are other rules that are involved that are important. You know, whenever you're dealing with government programs, you're always dealing with a plethora of rules. And the real hard part is, based on Congress, they're always changing.
Well, are they always changing? Now, some of these changes have been good. Now, a couple things that are going to be real key for you. The key ages are age 50 all the way to age 70. And believe it or not, there's all kinds of provisions that come in. Now, let's start with the first one. At age 50, if you are contributing to an IRA or, let's say, a 401k program, there is something called a catch-up provision that allows you, for example, to contribute $6,000 more when it comes to, let's say, a 401k program, $1,000 more when it comes to an IRA program. Age 59 and a half is another key age. That is the soonest that you can start withdrawing money from your IRA without paying a 10% additional tax penalty. If you have an IRA and you take out income, let's say, I don't know, you need some income, you're paying for something, you have emergency funds, you take it out. At age 55, there could be a 10% penalty in addition to the regular taxes. Now, there's a way to get around that that's a little complicated, and it's where you annuitize it and you take out annuity distributions. That is one way to get around it if you do need the income to live on. Age 62, as I mentioned, is the earliest age at which you can take Social Security benefits. And then for full retirement benefits, the two key ages are age 66 and age 67. And the differences between the two of them have to do with when you were born. If you were born before 1954, it's age 66. If you were born after 1960, it is age 67. Age 70 is another key age. That is an age where, if, let's say, you turn age full retirement benefit at age 66, you decide not to take your benefits. If you delay taking your benefits will go up 8% a year to age 70. After age 70, there is no benefit for delaying Social Security. They're not going to increase it. And then the other age, at age 70 and a half, if you have a pension plan, an IRA, you must begin taking mandatory distributions from your IRA, because if you don't, there is a 50% additional penalty tax on the amount that doesn't meet your full distribution. Let's say you're supposed to take, for example, we'll just take it an easy number. You're supposed to take $10,000 out a year out of your IRA, and you only take $5,000 because you've got your IRAs in all kinds of multiple locations. This is one reason why we like to recommend individuals consolidate their IRAs into one, so you don't run into this penalty. But given the example, let's say you were supposed to take $10,000 out and you only take $5,000 out. The $5,000 you did not take out, there's an additional penalty tax of 50%. So it'd be a $2,500 tax in addition to the regular income taxes that you should have been paid. So those dates are really, really important that you understand them. Let's just go over them real quickly, briefly. Age 50 is a catch-up provision where you're allowed to put more money in IRAs and 401ks. 59 and a half, you can start taking out money without a 10% penalty. 62 is the earliest to take your benefit. Age 66 and 67, depending on your birth date, is when you get full benefits. Age 70 is the longest you can delay after full retirement, where your benefits go up 8% a year, and 70 and a half is when mandatory distributions begin, and you must take them out, otherwise you're going to get penalized for 50% of any undistributed distributions.
So the question comes back again then, when do you take Social Security? It seems like if you take it at age 62, you get shorted, because if you wait till the full maturity on it, you get better benefits.
Well, you know, a lot of this, John, really depends on budgeting. There's three parts of your budget. There's the essential budget. That's what it costs you for food, housing, and health care. There's your discretionary budget, which is for travel, recreation, and nice things that you have, maybe toys. You want to buy a boat, RV. Then there's legacy, which is leaving money to heirs or charity. So it really depends on how much money you have saved up, because covering your essential budget throughout your lifetime is the most important thing that you can do. Now, you have several options. One, you may be fortunate enough where you have enough assets to provide monthly income. It may be to your advantage to delay taking your Social Security, allowing it to grow at 8% a year, so your wife, who's likely to be your survivor, as women are, will get additional benefit. Because a husband and wife, when one spouse passes away, let's say the wife is a survivor, she'll lose her benefits, but she can get her husband's. So if you have enough assets, that's a key question. Number two, you may have a pension plan annuity option at work. A lot of people have 401k plans or defined contribution plans at work, but the company also allows them, instead of taking a lump sum, rolling it over to an IRA, you may have an annuity option that actually may be more favorable to you than rolling your money over, and you need to look into that, because that can provide guaranteed income for your life and that of your spouse. Also, another consideration is the age difference and health difference between a husband and wife. In a lot of marriages that we come across, let's say the husband tends to be older. If there is a big age gap, 5, 6, 8 years difference, or 10 or more between husband and wife, plus the woman tends to live longer, women live longer than men, that becomes a consideration. Or you have a pension at work where you took a distribution option that was, let's say, only a 50% benefit to your wife, or a 75% benefit to your wife. So, John, all of those come into play in determining when you should take your Social Security. I would say at least waiting to age 66 is the best, unless you're in poor health or you have no assets, and really Social Security is going to be the bulk of your retirement benefits. You may not have a choice. I mean, one of the choices, I guess I would encourage you, if you could stay and work longer or work part-time rather than taking your Social Security benefit at age 62, your benefit at your full retirement age is going to be 25% bigger than it is at age 62.
You know, a lot of people are taking Social Security retirement at age 62 because they're afraid that Social Security won't be there. I mean, we already know that financially the program's running into trouble, and sooner or later there's going to have to be entitlement income reform. And people are, I think, thinking, I'll take it now while I can get it because it might not be there tomorrow.
Well, right now, full Social Security benefits are secured to the year 2034. After the year 2034, they would only be able to pay out 79% of benefits. So if you had $1,000 a month benefit in the year 2034, after that, the following year, it would be reduced to $790. Now, there's four possible solutions that Congress is toying with. One would link the cost of living increases to a different inflation index. This is one of the ways they deferred Social Security problems, because if you look at the inflation index that Social Security benefits are gauged to, obviously it's a different inflation index that is less favorable. The best example I can give you is 2017, where the benefits only went up 0.3%. So the first one is link it to a new and improved index where there's no inflation, so they would hardly give you any COLAs. The second one is to increase the retirement age beyond age 67, because we know that people are living longer. This is going to impact people that are under the age of 48. A third option, and one that is not very popular, and there would be a fight over this, would eliminate the wage cap on Social Security taxes. It's amazing, John. They use one inflation rate to increase the Social Security cap on which taxes are assessed, and they use a much lower different inflation index to give benefits. So they're already playing around with this, as currently is under law. And number four, increase payroll taxes, which would be hugely unpopular, especially after the Obamacare taxes that went into effect, the reinstatement of the Clinton taxes, the Pease Amendment, and then the extension and increase of Medicare taxes after Obamacare. So that is also important. But they know they need to do something. They'll probably not do it under Trump's first administration. If he gets reelected, they're going to have to address it, because they will start running into problems into the next decade.
What about the issue of planning for life expectancy, as how Social Security factors in? Now, tomorrow, you're going to be talking about the very same subject as far as planning for annuities and life expectancy with Moshe Milevsky. But anyway, as far as Social Security, how does that affect?
Well, I mean, a lot of it is your life expectancy. I mean, a male age 65 has a 50% chance of living to age 86, and a woman has a 50% chance of living to 89. Also, a male at age 65 has a 25% chance of living to age 93, and a woman age 95. So, you know, obviously, with life extensions expanding into those upper age brackets, the longer you're going to be dependent on assets. And that's why delaying Social Security could become a very important tool in helping you get through those latter years when your medical expenses go up. Now, there used to be a bunch of different options that you have on Social Security, and that was taken away with the Bipartisan Budget Act in 2015. They took away restricted applications and voluntary suspension. You used to be, and I'm just going to go through these quickly, a husband could file for Social Security at age 66 and then suspend, which would allow his wife to start receiving 50% of his benefit. And then the wife could refile a restricted application, which allow her own Social Security to grow at 8% a year. At the same time, she was getting 50% of her husband's Social Security. They took that away with the 2015 budget.
Now, tax implications.
Well, there are a number of things that you have to look at. If you are taking income out of a pension plan, let's say an IRA rollover, it's 100% taxable. It's ordinary income. You're not going to pay Social Security tax, but you will pay ordinary income taxes. Social Security is partially taxable. It could be zero tax, depending on your income. 50% of it could be subject to tax, or 85% of it could be subject to tax. And then you have things that are tax-free, which are munis, proceeds from life insurance like cash value, or if you did something like a Roth IRA. And one of the things that you also have to plan with your Social Security, for example, it may be more beneficial to take more income out of your IRA in your early years and delay receiving your Social Security till, let's say, age 70, at which time more of your income comes from Social Security, but only up to 50 to 85% of it is taxable. So that's another option that has to go in here.
So I guess the rule of thumb here for putting some rules together, just to remember, the longer you can delay taking Social Security benefits, the more money you'll have. It's 25% if instead of taking it at 62, you wait until full retirement, but 132% if you delay until age 70.
Yeah. And so there are a number of things that come into play here, and it really takes a lot of planning. And that's why this decision on what age to take Social Security is so important. For example, there's so many options that you have. And obviously, the longer that you wait, the higher the benefit. And that's really going to be important for a surviving spouse. So you can work longer. You have the option of working part-time if you want to delay to age 70. You may be fortunate enough that you have enough assets. You can put together a laddered bond portfolio, or you can create, let's say, a private pension plan with an income annuity, which we'll be talking about with my guest tomorrow. But remember, a key thing is you lose 25% of your benefits if you take it at age 62, and you get 32% more if you wait to age 70. And why this is so important in the planning process is, for those of you listening to this program, you're married, it is more likely your wife is going to survive you, because women are 85% of the beneficiaries of Social Security survivors. And so you should incorporate Social Security and tax planning in your retirement plan, because if you don't, you're missing out on some major, major implications for the soundness of your retirement plan, especially as we talk about longevity risk of living longer today.
Coming up tomorrow on the program, Moshe Milevsky is professor of finance at the Schulich School of Finance at Toronto University in Toronto, Ontario. We'll be talking about annuities, what you need to know. And now time for our real life case study, which as always is a hypothetical illustration based on real life examples. The names and circumstances have been changed, and we do have slides online at financialsense.com to illustrate the points which Jim is making.
This week, we're going to talk about Carl and Lisa Chang. Carl's age 65. Lisa is age 56. And just remember the difference in ages here, because it's going to come into play when we talk about solutions. Carl hopes to retire within the next year. His life expectancy is age 85 based on a health questionnaire. Lisa's is age 95. Their risk tolerance, like most people, are moderate. Investment objective, income with capital preservation. Just to tell you a little bit about Carl, he's an engineer. He's contemplated retirement for years, ever since his best friend retired in 2014. Now, he's excited to have more time with his wife and kids, and kind of eager to finally get back on the golf course and play more, especially since his friend has become a better golfer since he retired. However, Carl is concerned about the timing of retirement given the current market conditions. He's also unsure which pension options to choose from his company and when he should take Social Security, because once again, Social Security is going to be a major part of his retirement benefits. He wants to have as much money as possible, but he also wants to make sure his wife is protected after he passes, and especially since there's a 9-year difference between the two of them, and there's better health issues on her side of the family. Now, Lisa is very excited about her husband retiring. She looks forward to spending more time with him and being able to do the things they like to do, like travel and play more golf, and also visit their kids and grandkids. But like anybody else, especially given her age 56, she's worried about outliving their assets. Now, we took a look at their portfolio and their risk tolerance. Their risk tolerance on a scale of 10 was 3. Their portfolio was a risk of 5, so not too much of a difference between. They were fairly conservatively invested. We're going to change some of that. But what was important to them? especially Lisa, given that, number one, life expectancy in her family, they live well into their 90s. There was already a nine-year difference between the two of them, so she was really concerned about outliving assets, investment asset allocation, and then, of course, what was really big was how to maximize Social Security and pension. Their essential budget was $95,000, discretionary was $46,000, so they were spending about $131,000 with taxes. Carl's salary was $175,000, leaving them with a surplus of $44,000, which helped to build a nice little nest egg in their portfolio, not only in their retirement plan, but also personal assets. Looking at retirement, they thought that budget would drop down to about $92,000, wouldn't change much. Discretionary, obviously more travel, $51,000. So their budget was $143,000. And Carl's pension would be $56,000. His Social Security between them, actually basically him, would be $41,000. Shortfall would be $46,000. Carl and Lisa's assets, $500,000 in their residence, which was paid for. His retirement plan, $621,000. Carl and Lisa's taxable investments were $910,000. And they had about $25,000 in the bank, so total assets roughly of about a little over $2 million. So the main financial planning challenges was balancing out Social Security and the pension to maximize income, protecting against longevity risk, especially on Lisa's side, given the age difference in health, and managing sequence risk. In other words, you don't want to start out your retirement year and go through a market downturn as many people did in 2007 and 2009, and especially since we're way into this business recovery. What we did is we took a look at their assets and we basically reconfigured them a little bit, bought them a little bit safer, increased the yield. So their investment income would be roughly $49,000 a year. Add that to combined Social Security. But we did something a little different. What we did is we said, look, Carl had a pension and basically he took a 75% benefit, which basically it was a little bit lower than he could have got in a straight pension, but it would allow Carl to leave his wife 75% of his pension should he predecease her, which is likely given the age gap and the fact that health differences between the two of them. The second thing we did as a result of that is we suggested that Carl delay taking his Social Security to age 70, because that's going to do two things. Number one, it's going to be 32% bigger. So if something happens to Carl, Lisa gets a larger Social Security check, and that 32% increase in benefits would more than offset the 25% loss in Carl's pension to Lisa. The other thing that we did is we moved a little bit more out of stocks into bonds in their investment portfolio because we wanted to have a safer, he didn't want to go through another 2007 and 2009 and another, let's say, 2000 and 2002. Now, back in 2000, he was young enough he could ride out that market. The impact of the downturn in 2007 and 2009 had a much greater impact on their portfolio and took them years to recover. In fact, Carl told me, he said, you know, had he been listening, he'd been listening to the program for a long time, had he been a little bit more cognizant of market risk, he would probably have more in his retirement plan. So what we did here was basically we took a pension option from the company, and the maximum benefit with leaving something to Lisa was 75%. So if Carl passes on, Lisa would get 75% of Carl's option. But by delaying Carl's Social Security to age 70, his benefit would go up 32%, which would more than make up for the option. So, John, here was a case where we had to kind of strategize maximizing what he was going to get from the company pension, and then also maximizing Social Security benefits, in particular for Lisa's benefit, given the age and health differences between the two of them.
And coming up tomorrow on the program, Jim's guest is Moshe Milevsky. He's professor of finance at the Schulich School of Finance at Toronto University. What you need to know about annuities when you're planning for retirement. And in the weeks to come, Jim.
In the weeks to come, we are going to get into Medicare, folks. The sign-up, if you are eligible for Medicare, age 65, that sign-up period starts October 15th, so we want to make sure we cover that. And you know what all your options are and how to apply for it properly. That's going to be coming up here in the weeks ahead. We want to give you a head start because the sign-up date is October 15th and is fastly approaching here. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until we talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.